The massacre in New Zealand, that country's prime minister calling it one of their darkest days. The attack raising troubling questions about hate and violence in the world and presenting some real challenges for the media on how to cover it all. Hello, everybody. Welcome to this special edition of Behind the Media. I'm Dan Lothian. Jimmy Young is off. We find the interesting in media so you don't have to go searching for it. Like us on Facebook, use the hashtag Behind the Media to engage with us on Twitter, and listen on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and the CLNS Media Network. Today's episode is powered by Away, thoughtful standards for modern travel. Away makes suitcases for the way we all travel with features like an ejectable TSA-approved battery or a built-in front pocket, and they come in a range of colors and materials that suit your travel style. For $20 off a suitcase, visit awaytravel.com and enter promo code CLNS. So, slightly different schedule on this podcast. I mean, usually it is we really dive into some of the media issues of the day that sometimes are fun, lighthearted, probing. But this one today, I think, in light of what has happened in New Zealand, calls for a thoughtful, not only reflection on what has happened there, but also caused us to really look at how the media might be contributing to some of the things that we're seeing, such as this, and what can reporters and editors and other news managers do to better filter some of this material as it gets out there, it hits the public, what kind of impact it's having on them. It raises a lot of questions about the ethical dilemma around covering an event like this, a tragic event like this. So, again, I'm flying solo today, but there are several issues that I want to kind of run through. If we can, issues such as how much of the video, and we'll get into that. And if you haven't heard a lot about this story, I'm sure you have by now, but how much of that video of sort of real time video streaming that the suspect had rolling on Facebook, how much of that should we be replaying, if at all, to the public? How does that potentially spawn copycats out there to carry out similar attacks like this down the road? Should we or should we not be using the name of the suspect? And then finally, I want to touch on this, just the issue of Facebook. Facebook has been in the news now for quite some time around issues of privacy and just handling how to handle the wave of misinformation, just false information that's been being put out there. It's a challenge that I think Facebook has been struggling to deal with. And every time they seem to put measures in place, there's always something that kind of comes along, something new, something bigger and bolder, and again shines the spotlight on the difficulty of such a massive social media platform that is available to so many people to use, the hope obviously being to be used in a positive way. But every now and then, or some would say every day, someone is mishandling, misusing this tool, as we saw in this case in New Zealand. Just to back up a little bit, someone was asking about how, you know, the fact that weren't people thinking over at Facebook, thinking about how this kind of thing could potentially happen. And by what I mean by this kind of thing, I'm talking about live streaming of a shooting or of an attack. It's not the first time that it has happened, but certainly one of, to my knowledge, one of the biggest cases in terms of how many people have lost their lives and how many people have suffered at the hands of this this crazy racist individual. If I think back to when I first heard about Facebook Live, it's my understanding that it was not part of the social media platform's overall strategy or latest gimmick, if you will, to bring on new subscribers, to kind of get people energized around Facebook. It almost kind of happened, right? It was, they were kind of playing around with this. It became quite popular, initially used by some in Hollywood and other stars to give you a behind the scenes peek, kind of like we do here on Behind the Media, but show you live, hey, here I am in my dressing room getting ready to go out and perform, or I just came back from this book signing and some really great people. It's bringing your audience closer to you and your life through this live streaming capacity. There's always something about live nature. It's the reason people love live broadcasting. Those kinds of things give a more personal, visceral connection to whatever is going on. And oftentimes, yeah, there are lots of great videos out there that people can feel a connection to. But in the case of something live, it almost makes you feel like you're in on something, right? You're there, you're watching it as it happens. And you don't have to later be told about it. You see it happening live. And so that's kind of how this all got going, mostly with celebrities giving you that view, and then Facebook realizing, wow, this is something that's really popular, and they rolled it out as a major feature of the platform. Again, it's my understanding this was not something that they drew up as the next big thing, but it did become the next big thing. And anytime there's a next big thing, there's also a next big problem. And that's where Facebook finds itself now. Again, not connecting the dots here and saying Facebook is to blame for this massacre that happened in New Zealand. I'm not saying that at all. But what we see is that there are people out there, and now we're seeing it up close, much more severe than perhaps we even imagine. A lot of ugly, hateful, violent people out there who are utilizing some of the tools that we use every day to post pictures and stream some family event. They're using it to not only show that underbelly, that dark side of this world and tragic side of this world, but also use it perhaps as a tool to motivate and recruit others to carry out these same kind of brutal attacks. And it is shocking that this is happening. It is, when you see something like this, so extreme, it rattles you to the core. But it's the world that we live in. And every day we see little small steps in this direction of this kind of hate and anger being spewed out on social media. And so, yes, shocking, especially when you see the number of people who have lost their lives, but ultimately not surprising, because there is a lot of hate in this world, and we see it every day. And it comes sometimes from politicians or from people out on the street. That's nothing that we can control. I mean, certainly I can't control what other people think and say and do. But what can we do in the media to prevent others out there from potentially, you know, jumping behind some crazy ideology and carrying something out because they're motivated by what they see? Again, I can't necessarily control someone's life, but can I control the content that's put out there? Or should I even? Do you think I should be controlling the content? What is put out there? I mean, after all, we talk a lot about the free press and this ability for information to flow freely to the public, and that no one should be standing in the way and preventing me from seeing video or whatever it is that I want to see. But these kinds of issues, you know, if that's the way you feel, it's challenged in a situation like this, because it's not only that, you know, it could potentially motivate someone to action. But what about the people who are sitting at home and or watching on their devices, and they are dealing with some, you know, emotional problems, and something like this is difficult for them to process? You know, how do you have to even think about that when you make those decisions of how much to show and what not to show? You know, first of all, one of the things that often comes up when we have this conversation is that, you know, whether or not the 6 o'clock news or the morning shows decide to air this, you know, footage, the replay of the live feed, at least portions of it, whether or not they do that, it's out there on the internet. And that's true. Although much more difficult to find once Facebook stepped in and pulled down the feed and got rid of this person's profile, you know, kind of scrubbed, even got rid of the comments. And I'll talk a little bit about more about that later on. But it was disturbing to read and see the comments that were being posted as this was being carried out live. I did not see it as it was happening live, but I did I did hear about it, read about it. People were replaying it, and in other words, talking about here are some things that quoting some of these comments that were made, and it was shocking. There are people out there who may not pick up a gun and mow down dozens of people, but will sit back and cheer on someone who is doing that. That's sickening. I was, I guess I know that that's out there, but when you see it, when you see the excitement behind some of the chants, they're watching people dying and they're rooting on this person, as if they, you know, they were the ones who were part of this shooting as well. I mean, I almost feel as if they're just as guilty because they were there rooting on this killer as he was carrying out this heinous act. And that to me was troubling. It's one thing for this person who, whatever his mental capacity is to carry out something like this, but to see so many people out there in the comment section who were thrilled about this. And you know, I'm sure there was probably a certain percentage of it, of them who may not even really thought that that was real. I don't know. They see a lot of this happening sometimes in video games. And so maybe this is all part of that crazy, twisted thinking. But nonetheless, there were these people who were rooting on a killer in real time. And it was real time because it was being streamed via Facebook. So the question then is, how should this be handled? A lot of this was pulled down, but as you know, as you listen to this, anything that happens online is usually captured by someone somewhere. And so most video, I'm sure there's something out there that can be wiped completely, but most of the time, this kind of stuff, and it did in this case, will circulate around on other platforms where you can go and replay this disturbing footage. And so the networks and a lot of the media out there, I thought, and I did not, this is not a scientific study, but based on the early coverage of this story, I thought were quite responsible in how they handled the footage. And one of the things that really was surprising to me, and I've never been to New Zealand. I've traveled all around the world. That's not a country that I've been to, at least not yet. And I don't really know a lot about their media and the style and some of the traditional ways in which they cover stories there. Clearly, no one has any real experience in covering, or at least there they don't, because something like this has never happened. They don't have experience in covering this, but it seemed to me, based on what I was listening to, that they had a very measured approach. There was one presenter, I guess, who I was listening to, and what he did was, and I thought it was remarkable, so it was clear that he wanted to make sure that his audience could get a lot of the information without going all the way there, right? Without seeing people being shot, without seeing the most brutal portion of that footage. And what he did was he walked you through. He goes, okay, here was the gunman. He was driving along in his car. He started shooting out the window, the passenger side. He was very descriptive in how, what was happening. And then he talked about how, and then we stopped the footage now. But then he goes in, and so it was almost as if he was giving you the information that you needed to have and showing you, narrating, again, not using the natural sound that was coming from the video, but narrating the video in such a way that you got the information without it being too sensitive for your audience. I mean, clearly, anytime you're talking about this, for some people, anything that you say can be too sensitive. But I thought that it was a real measured approach that this presenter took in giving you the news without going overboard. And so this raises that discussion about, should we be even showing that video at all? Should we even do what this presenter did, which is, you know, I'll show you some of it. I'm not going to use the sound. I'm not going to show you people getting hit by the bullets. You'll see some gunfire and so forth. But I'm not going to show you everything. But is just the fact that you're putting the video out there glorifying this monster? Is it, you know, if you by the function of showing some of that video and even showing, and the part I haven't mentioned until just now, is that this gunman, this crazy lunatic, also had written the names of these quote unquote heroes of his, other crazy individuals who had carried out violent attacks around the world, including here in the United States, and he had etched their names into one of his weapons. And so there was a lot of talk about that, and even the mention of the names of some of those, you know, that he had put onto one of his weapons. Should we even be talking about that? Is that further? Is that adding more to the overall mystique, if you will, of these kinds of hateful individuals? You know, it is a tough line to draw, where you just back away from covering vital components of a breaking news story. It is true, and I think, you know, one of the things that only a few networks had been doing for some time, and I know CNN made, Anderson Cooper made a big deal about this, ultimately when there would be a mass shooting, refusing to mention the name of the suspect. And it does seem as if more and more networks have jumped on board, and especially in this case, not mentioning the name of the shooter, because you don't want to glorify something like this using the medium, this powerful medium of the visuals and the audio. You don't want to give that individual more or exactly what they were hoping to gain by carrying out this attack. And so you start in, within newsrooms, or this is behind the media, you may be sitting there listening to this and saying, well, you get video and you throw it out there, or you get audio and you put it out there. No, there are conversations that take place long before something like this happens about how you will choose to handle that. But certainly in the moment, when you do know exactly what it is that you're dealing with, there are these conversations that are happening. How much should we show? How should we handle the information that we put out there? Yes, we'll mention the name one time of the suspect, but we won't mention it in second or third or fourth references. We need to spend more time focusing on the victims rather than focusing on the suspect. All of these are questions that newsrooms have been having as this story has unfolded, and as others, sadly, will unfold in the future. And so it isn't as if there isn't a thinking or thought that goes behind it. There is this ongoing effort to make sure that the news is sensitive to the consumers, while at the same time still being informative. Now to this question of whether or not when they do that, they're doing it because it's the right thing to do, or there's this sense that if you put too much out there, people will copycat it, that they'll see that and be motivated to carry something like this out. My thinking, I think I go both ways on this. It is true that if someone, when you see something, you do get an idea in your head. I mean, if you didn't know that you could, that something could happen a certain way and you saw it, it's now in your brain, right? It's hard to erase that. And so you can't dispute the fact that someone carrying out another brutal attack somewhere could potentially have a couple of other cases that happen in the back of his mind or her mind. Having said that, I don't think that live streaming or the mention of someone's name or any other kind of spotlight that the media put on the suspect actually causes people to become violent, to become hateful. That's all, you know, that's a deeper a deeper, more troubling problem that we have not only in our country, but all around the world. And that's not something we're going to, you know, delve into here. That's not my area of expertise, although I can talk on and on about hate and violence in the world. But that's not why that's not the power that the medium has. When people are evil, they don't need a live stream video of someone in New Zealand to motivate them to carry something out. There are more motivating things happening at rallies and in dark corners, in meeting houses, wherever it is that these crazy individuals are hiding out. That's where this stuff is being sown and watered, and where it grows into this plant and eventually into some kind of a bomb, if you will, that explodes one day. This is the result. That's where this comes from. It's not someone showing you a video, certainly not a news video, that motivates people to carry out these kinds of things. Can some of those hateful individuals, and do some of them, take the footage that is put out there and edit it and use it as part of their sizzle reel, if you will, to recruit and to brainwash young individuals out there? You could argue, yes, I'm sure that's happening. But I don't think that you can point the finger at the media and say, because you showed this, because Facebook was, you know, giving you the ability to stream that, that's the reason we're going to have a problem with violence, you know, down the road. When the next one happens, you know, blood's going to be on the hands of the media or Facebook in general. Because that's what caused this to happen. And I think that's a wrong way of thinking. You know, there are a lot of things that you can point a finger of blame at the media, certainly at Facebook, for what they may or may not have done in order to deal with a whole lot of issues, what they didn't anticipate when they were putting together something like this. But this is the reason and the root cause for what we're seeing now is much deeper, much more complex, much more, I think, scary, really, when you think about it. Because if it was as simple as just don't show the video, turn off the stream, stop showing the pictures, and don't use someone's name, and we won't see this again. Well, you know what? I think everyone would vote, turn it off, stop using the name. It's a no-brainer, right? If it were that easy, that's what we all would do. But it's not that easy. It's a bigger, more complex problem that, again, we can't solve here on this podcast. But I have to come down on the side of the duty of journalists certainly is to be sensitive. And I think sensitive to the viewers in terms of the information we put out there. We want to not overly glorify the violence that has taken place. But I don't think we should just shut the door on our coverage. Because someone pointed out, I was listening on radio, I was driving into Boston this morning, and I was listening to a radio station that was giving, having quite a debate on this same issue. And one of the hosts pointed out that he thinks that seeing this, maybe not every bit of the footage, but we know violent things happen in the world. We see the headlines of a shooting, and we know that people are being gunned down in communities for no fault of their own, that someone hated them and they gunned them down. We know that. Most people, I think most sane people, are against that. Clearly, by what we saw with people putting in the comment section and rooting on this gunman, there are those who actually aren't turned off by this, that they really like it. But when you see, when you actually see the video, here's what I think happens. It takes something that you're troubled by and that you're against, and by seeing it, it may motivate you to prevent something like that in the future. What I mean by that is, I can sit back and say, you know what, I'm that happened. I didn't see all the pictures and everything. It's sad. I may post something and say, you know, this is really sad that it's happening in my community. It happened in my country. It happened in my world, whatever it may be. And then you do a rest in peace or whatever it is that you say. Hearts and prayers go out to the family members. And then you go on with your life. But for some people, when you see the video, when you see real bullets flying, when you hear the name, when you hear about the and read the gunman's manifesto, this 74-page document that apparently spews out hate and gets into this troubling, disturbed mind, when you are you get an up close, almost real time perspective of what's going on, it may motivate you to do something more than just send out a thoughts and prayers. Maybe you start writing your lawmaker. Maybe you join an organization that fights this kind of violence. Maybe you think about, developing some kind of technology that can root these people out. It just may spawn action. It is painful to watch. It is difficult to watch. But what if seeing more of something ugly would lead to good? And I don't know that I know the complete answer to that. I don't know that it's yes or no. I do think that you have to give that argument some merit, because there have been times where I heard about something and never reached into my wallet and did anything about it. And then all of a sudden, I go to an event and somebody who's connected to that same appeal is standing in front of me and telling me a story and showing me pictures and showing me a video and holding maybe it's a child who is part of, a war from a war-torn country who lost a limb because of a landmine, whatever it is. All of a sudden, I'm reaching into my wallet and I'm donating to this organization. I needed something visceral in order to make me act. And could that be one of the positive, and I put that in quotes, positive benefits of seeing gruesome, horrible images from a massacre like this? I'm not saying you need to show everything, but are we wiping it down too much? Are we hiding too much for the sake of not pushing, promoting and potentially instigating? Are we going too far? You always think of you have young kids and you want to prepare them for the world, and you don't want them to go out there and not know about anything and then face it one day and go, wow, I didn't know about this. I didn't know it was so bad. It was cleaned up for me. Are we cleaning up too much? In the media, I mean. Are we cleaning up too much? Should we have, should we put a little bit more out there? I don't think everybody would agree with me on this. And I don't know that I necessarily feel that way. I'm just putting it out there as something that we need to consider. Because when things are put out in the light, that's when real change can happen. When they continue to crawl around in darkness, it's much harder to get at them. It's much harder to root them out. And then ultimately, when you think about Facebook and this idea that, could they be doing more? Could they be doing more to gather information that's out there? After all, every time something like this happens, the first place we go, and certainly this one started with a live feed on Facebook, but every time something happens, if it's not directly connected to Facebook, we run to Facebook or other social media platforms to see, what did this suspect say about this? Was there a warning sign? Were there flags? And so forth and so on. And in most of the cases, there was a flag. There was a very red flag, and it was missed. Or maybe wasn't taken seriously by those who were, those flags were being waved in front of their faces. I know Facebook has teams of people who are constantly scouring for anything that could be reported. Certainly internally, there are a lot of issues about how much information that they have can be shared with law enforcement. But nonetheless, I know there are people who are looking for other bad people or other bad bad postings and language and whatever it may be. And you'll hear from time to time that this account was closed down and this person was booted off of Facebook or some other social media platform. You know, that is happening. But is there more that could be done? Whether it's coordination, more better coordination with law enforcement, whether it's the use of technology. I mean, we know artificial intelligence is being used for a whole host of things. And my guess would be that it is being used to try to weed out some of these kinds of the hate speech and other things. Look, you can't stop, nor should you stop hate speech. This is, after all, a country of free speech. So I think that, you know, you can't just because someone said something that you don't agree with, that you should wipe it out there. But is there a way to better monitor and or track so that you will know, or you can be perhaps just a few minutes ahead of something like this to stop it from happening? And I think that's a question that the public is asking. I'm sure over there at Facebook that they're trying to figure out, you know, what else can we do? Again, not being, I don't think you can blame Facebook for this happening, but can Facebook be part of the solution? It's a sad story. It's not something that I love talking about. Unfortunately, it's something that happens all the time, maybe not at this scale, but it happens. And these kinds of conversations, maybe not with this much volume behind it, but, you know, these kind of conversations happen every time there is a mass shooting, especially here in the United States. I think it's time I wish that we would not be having this conversation, that we can come up with a solution so that we don't have to talk about this because it isn't happening anymore. That's in a pie-in-the-sky kind of world. I get it. I know that. It's not a perfect world. In fact, it's an uglier world now than I ever imagined it would be. The kinds of things that people feel free to say to you in your face or say it on social media or say it through some TV show out there. It's amazing the kinds of things that people feel free to do. And it's those kinds of where they're getting it from is the root of the problem. And eventually we see it explode like this. It's troubling. It's disheartening. It makes you want to just kind of curl up and stay in a corner and not come outside. But you can't do that. You have to keep fighting back with the hope that there will be some change and that someone will have a solution to deal with this problem. Wish I was talking about something much more positive, as we often do. Wish Jimmy was across the seat here from me, here at the table from me, where we often duke it out over some issue in media. We'll be back to that again, but thought it was critical, important for us to have this conversation, not just about the tragedy itself, but how the media covers it and whether or not there's any blame around the visuals and the content that's put out there. That's all for this episode of Behind the Media. If you liked the episode, let us know. Like us on Facebook. Use the hashtag Behind the Media to engage with us on Twitter. And of course, as always, if you have any questions or even comments, I'd love to hear from you what you think about what we've just had the last several minutes talking about. I'd love to hear from you. Reach out to us at info@littlepartmedia.com. That's info@littlepartmedia.com. For our director, Steve Helmuth, I'm Dan Lothian, and now you know what's behind the media.